Hello and welcome to the Tree City Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Baker, here with my co-host, Graham Moen. And
Yeah! We
are mid-NBA Finals today, heading into Game 5 tonight.
Wait, there's no Game 5 tonight, Andrew?
There's no Game 5. This is a funeral podcast. A funeral for the Cavs 2017-18 season. A funeral to a disappointing but not really surprising NBA Finals, and perhaps a funeral to LeBron James' second run in Cleveland.
And maybe the start of one of the saddest 30 for 30 videos of all time. We've been talking about this for a couple of weeks, or just since Game 1 happened. I personally love the title, How to Lose LeBron in 5 Seconds or Less, but I think we both were very distraught about that game and just in general.
We cope with humor because we'd rather laugh than cry, but it's sad. Well, going into the finals, we pretty much said on the podcast that it would be a miracle if the Cavs won, and we didn't think it would even really be a long series. We did a podcast after game one,
after the fall,
where we pretty much laid out the Cavs took their shot. LeBron had one of the best games he's ever played in the playoffs, or anywhere, or at any time, really. And the Cavs did everything right, and we said the Warriors would adjust. They'd play LeBron much differently on defense. And it, you know, we were right.
Well, there were some other factors, too.
There were other factors, which at the time we didn't know that LeBron had a hand injury that he caused himself by punching a chalkboard, which,
well, it was J.R. Smith's fault.
Well, it's a lot of people's fault.
George Hill and J.R. Smith made him punch a chalkboard.
Yeah, it just it's disappointing the way it played out. LeBron clearly didn't have his jump shot because of the hand injury, and I don't think that's really an excuse, especially because he did it to himself. But
yeah,
I don't think it was going to change the outcome of the series in any way. I think if LeBron was at supernova level, the Cavs could have won a game. I just think that's the talent disparity between these two teams. I think if the Cavs would have won game one, this could have been a 6 or 7 game series. And there's a small, small chance the Cavs could have pulled off the miracle of miracles. But I think once the Cavs blew game one and LeBron hurt his hand, I just think that was the end of the series. And I honestly, you could tell even watching the end of game one, that was it. The Cavs had their shot to make it a series, and they blew it.
And it was in Golden State, too. So it's not like it was just like a home win that they were like taking solace in. They had their shot in Golden State with a visibly shook Golden State team that was like, I can't believe this is happening. I think we're going to lose. And it was a George Hill missed free throw. We all know the secrets. George Hill missed free throw, a JR blunder for the ages. And
LeBron mentioned questionable calls down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked about
that.
A lot
of factors.
We talked about that ad nauseum in the Game 1 podcast, just about the officiating, so there's not really any sense in harping on it. It kind of is what it is at this point, but
end of the day, Kevin Durant didn't have an aggressive game one.
And he wasn't efficient either.
And the Warriors defended LeBron very softly. And pretty much what we said on the podcast would happen is what happened. The Warriors figured out, oh wait, if we just double LeBron every time, no one else on the roster can beat us. So they doubled LeBron for 3 games straight, and the Cavs had no answer because they have no one else that can take the ball to the basket. Without Kyrie on this roster, there's no one else that can, you know, basically run the offense or try and score when the Warriors double LeBron. The Cavs aren't good enough at passing or shooting to play 4-on-3 either, and the Warriors are too fast at recovering.
And those open threes that the Cavs were getting because of the double teams on LeBron, they weren't hitting them. J.R. Smith was missing them. Kevin Love was missing them. Like, George Hill was missing his threes. Like, no one, we had those, so even though LeBron was getting double-teamed, we had those open shots that if they just made even half of those, it could have been a different story. Because even in Game 3, the Cavs were in it until the very end. It took a dagger-long three-pointer from Kevin Durant to ice that game. Had he missed that three, which, as we all saw during the game, he was pretty much on fire. He carried that Warriors team in Game 3, scoring, I think it was 43 points, and he was just super efficient, setting up anywhere he wanted. But once that shot went in, I knew for a fact that, not for a fact, I knew in my heart that this was over.
Yeah, it's how it goes. Because after, we knew that Kevin Durant was going to be more aggressive after game one. We knew the Warriors were going to defend the Cavs differently and make adjustments, and that's what happened. But end of the day, regardless of what order it happened in, why it happened, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the result is not surprising. And if you're counting on George Hill and J.R. Smith in 2018 and you're playing against Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, it just...
Draymond and his antics.
You're not going to win.
Yeah.
And that's the reality, is the Cavs are a vastly, vastly inferior team. And I think the way this series went and the way this series showed the obvious disparity in coaching, talent, and organizational culture between the three teams.
Two teams.
Three
teams can play in the final?
I guess game one there was a third team, but...
I mean, I guess...
the refs, but yeah,
maybe
so...
Maybe you could beat the Warriors if you play tag team with another team.
Right. Yeah, that would be a good idea. 10-on-5, that would make it more fair. What do you think? If the Cavs could play six players...
No, what if it was the Rockets and the Cavs together?
If the Cavs could play six players at a time, do you think they would have beat the Warriors this year?
No. Because Kevin Durant can just shoot over anybody. That's the problem.
It's an insane question to even ask.
Now, if you put the Rockets and the Cavs together, maybe.
The fact that that's even a question is ridiculous. But anyways, not to get too far off the rails here, but it just shows you everything about the fact that the Warriors are still one of the greatest teams we've ever seen, and the Cavs have fallen so far in only a year. And I think the fallout from this finals is, you know...
Is
LeBron
changing.
Gone? You know, are the Cavs going to change their organizational culture to be a more stable organization to avoid these problems happening again? Short answer is probably no, because Dan Gilbert's the owner. So I think we could break down what happened in the series specifically all we want, but it doesn't really matter because the Cavs weren't winning the series. So I think it's most useful if we look back and discuss not only... you know, what happened to the Cavs throughout the past year that got them to this point, but also the reasons for what got the Cavs to this point. And I think, above all else, I think if you look back to last summer, obviously the Cavs are going to have a lot of regrets about things that have happened in the past year. But I think we can start with the David Griffin decision by Dan Gilbert. And I think Dan Gilbert basically deciding that he wants to be Mr. Big Balls and be in control of his entire franchise and not let the best owners in the NBA that have the most consistently winning organizations and the best organizational culture. There is number one theme above even a willingness to spend money, which Dan Gilbert does have. He'll spend a lot of money. But the number one thing the best franchises have is an owner that commits to continuity and culture and commits to paying a general manager and or a president and getting the hell out of the way and letting his front office make basketball decisions. And Dan Gilbert has decided that he's not going to be that owner.
Like all the best organizations, I mean... Do you know the owner's name for the Spurs? I don't.
It's Peter Holt, but it's not a household name.
And then, like, talking about the Miami when they were winning, no one knew Mickey Arison. They all thought Pat Riley.
Mickey Arison's the rich guy sitting courtside. Pat Riley runs the team. That's how it has to work.
And then the Warriors.
An owner can look at the business side, improving the arena, and who to hire. But there's that famous saying, hire the best people and let them do their jobs. And Dan Gilbert will not do that.
No, he wants to do everything himself. Like, he was even talking about how he was part of the workout recently, a little bit off base, but just to get that point forward, he was talking about how he was there helping evaluate Colin Sexton at their latest workout when they worked him out a few days ago. Like, why are you there? Why does it matter what your basketball opinion is? Your basketball career as an owner has been defined by one player, and it's been LeBron. And after you wrote that letter, LeBron still came back to you, and it wasn't for you, bro. I don't know. I don't know if you think it was. He clearly doesn't like you still to this day. The only reason he came back was He said he was going to bring a championship to Cleveland. He did. He likes this area. He his family likes this area. And at this point, the way Dan Gilbert's handled these situations, that's really the only thread of hope you can lean on for the Cavs is LeBron loves this area. That's for a later podcast, but the way that Dan Gilbert has run this team has made it very difficult to have any sort of continuity because, like I said, the best teams in sports, you don't know the owners' names because they get out of the way, like Andrew said, and they let them do the jobs. The Warriors let their GM do the job, and he did a fantastic job, and Steve Kerr. Again, Spurs. The Mavericks are the one team I've noticed in the last maybe 15 years that won a championship with a very outspoken owner.
And I think that having an outspoken and involved owner is okay. But having an owner that wants his say in every decision on the basketball side,
which he's not qualified.
That is exactly. Dan Gilbert is...
He's as qualified as we are.
Dan Gilbert is really good at making money, okay? He's not a basketball guy. He's not a scout. And I'm sure he has many advisors and many people have taught him a lot over the years. I'm sure there's a lot Dan Gilbert has learned about how the NBA works, scouting, all these things. But at the end of the day, if you have an owner that is meddling in every decision the front office makes, you're not going to have a good organization. And that's how it goes. And that's where the Cavs are at now. And the Cavs got a title. So
but it's like I'm not gonna
sit here and say that the second LeBron era, if it is over, which we don't know, and like Graham said, we're gonna have near the end of the podcast, we're gonna have kind of a roadmap for all the topics we're gonna discuss in the coming days. In coming weeks. But the Cavs didn't win a title because they built a great organization, made the right draft picks, made the right personnel choices. The Cavs won the title for a couple of reasons. Number one, they got lucky and won the lottery from the number 9 spot, which is about a 2% chance, and got Kyrie Irving. The
Baron Davis trade.
And Kyrie Irving was the consensus number 1 pick. There was no one else really considered that spot.
There's no chance for them to mess it up.
Exactly. So, you know, the Cavs did make the correct pick, but it's not like it was a pick where they went out of pocket to make the pick. The time they did that, they got Anthony Bennett, who was, from day one of the worst and most inept NBA players I've seen in my life.
The last two times the Cavs didn't have to think about it, they got LeBron and Kyrie Irving out.
Yeah. And from there, the Cavs made some good moves and some bad moves. You know, the J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, and Timofey Mozgov acquisitions are part of what got the Cavs a title.
It's true.
But looking forward, and look, when you have LeBron on your roster, you have to sacrifice the future to win now. That's how it works. And the Cavs did that, which was the right choice, and they won a title. And that's good. But Dan Gilbert has such an ego that it seems to me that Dan Gilbert believes that he's a major, major reason why the Cavs have won this title and why they've had success the past few years. And that's not true.
It's just because of his checkbook.
It's because he's willing to spend money. And look, having an owner like Dan Gilbert who is willing to spend massive amounts of money is incredibly helpful. But it's not a good replacement for a stable, intelligent, teamwork-oriented front office and culture. And I think looking at the past year and looking at where we're at now, a year ago, the Cavs were coming off a hard-fought finals loss to the Warriors.
Just because it was a five-game series.
Who had just gotten Kevin Durant, and they had options on how they wanted to change their future. They had a lot of bad contracts coming off of that championship they had to give out, granted. I'll give you that.
Tristan, JR. But
the Cavs last summer, Dan Gilbert said, I'm taking control of this organization. It's my team going forward. And from that moment, that decision has led the Cavs to where they're at now, to where there's a very, very significant chance they're going to lose LeBron. And from that moment, what happened was the Cavs traded Kyrie Irving. And when David Griffin was not re-signed by the Cavs to be GM, they lost all sense of continuity and organizational culture. If David Griffin would have been re-signed to be the Cavs' president of basketball operations, as he should have been, as every other team in the NBA would have told you he should be, as every average Joe fan would have told you he should be.
That Kyrie trade wouldn't have happened.
The Kyrie trade most likely wouldn't have happened.
Or if it did, and if it did, required a lot more.
And if it did, the Cavs wouldn't have gotten what they got back. They would have gotten a lot more. And that's the reality here. And I think it's sad because I think when LeBron came back in 2014, I think he probably wanted to retire here. But if he does go at this point...
Can't blame him.
There's just nothing anybody can say because the organization has not done, from the top down, what's been needed to be done to keep this team winning in the long run and make the right choices. And that starts and ends with Dan Gilbert.
Yeah, I mean, the difference is this: the first time LeBron was here, he made certain promises that he didn't keep and he left. And obviously it was winning a championship and he didn't owe us that, but he left and a lot of fans had bad taste in their mouth because of that. And
Way he left mostly.
Yeah.
Not because he did.
So people were on Dan Gilbert's side that time because they were angry that he left the way he did. And that's why that letter that was put out by Dan Gilbert, people weren't as infuriated. If he did that now, if LeBron leaves this time... Honestly,
there would be a boycott of the Cavs.
Yeah, honestly, if you're a Cavs season ticket holder, cancel your season tickets if that happens. Don't give this man any more money than he needs, because if it's to that point where his ego is so big that he's willing to push out the greatest or second greatest player of all time that wanted to stay and bring a title to your city, which he did. He came back the second time and he gave everything he's had in these 4 years and he delivered on his promise. He put all of his work into it and got us the title. And honestly, if it wasn't for the Warriors, and it was that reasoning of the way he did it, that the Warriors did what they did and signed Kevin Durant. Because if the Cavs had lost that finals to the Warriors, what do you think? Do you think Kevin Durant's with the Warriors? No, he's probably still in Oklahoma City. Or if he's not in Oklahoma City, he's probably with like the Lakers or something. But regardless, he's not joining a 73-win team that, had they just taken care of their business, it would have shaped the NBA completely different. But because LeBron is so great and put everything he had into it, Kyrie Irving obviously was a big factor, that finals changed the entire outlook of the NBA because the Warriors got Kevin Durant, and from there it was pretty much a wrap. Because as great as LeBron is, you can't beat him. And when they tried beating him with Kyrie Irving and it didn't work, that's just because of the smaller pieces around them. Had the Cavs brought this team back this year, had David Griffin still been the GM, those other signings in the free agency wouldn't have happened. The Dwayne Wade signings, the Isaiah Thomas trade wouldn't have happened. We'd still have Kyrie, Kevin Love, and LeBron, and that team alone could have made this series a 6 or 7 game series without having to think about all the little players that would have had to play out of their minds to win this series.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Cavs this year with Kyrie, obviously, like you mentioned, the Kyrie trade doesn't happen, and the deadline don't happen, but something would have happened.
It would have been different trades.
And David Griffin has made a lot of savvy moves, or made a lot of savvy moves, I should say, in his time as GM to help the Cavs win now. And this year's Warriors team is vastly better than the Cavs.
But they were vulnerable. Because they didn't have a bench.
This year's Warriors team would not be in the finals had Chris Paul not hurt his ankle before Game 6 and 7 of the Western Conference Finals.
And with Kyrie?
I firmly believe that to be true.
No, I believe it too.
The Rockets were up...
They're up 3-2.
3-2 with the home game in Game 7. And
Chris Paul was playing
They built that well. Team to beat the Warriors, and they almost pulled it off. And the Warriors this year didn't have depth, and they didn't have as much talent. But the Cavs are so devoid of depth and talent that... The high-end talent the Warriors have made this so it couldn't be a series.
I mean,
and if you kept David Griffin last summer and you kept Kyrie,
this would have been a toss-up series.
It would have been... If not a toss-up series, it would have been a lot closer to a toss-up than what we got now. And I think Dan Gilbert deserves pretty much every bit of criticism he's getting. And moving on from... roasting Dan Gilbert, which, again, I think is completely deserved, and I'm glad we did it. I think the Kyrie trade they did make which also, by the way, had Dan Gilbert fingerprints all over it because apparently he was enamored with Isaiah Thomas.
And he wanted that pick really bad.
This is a reminder. I think this gets lost in the wind sometimes. The Cavs agreed to the Isaiah Thomas trade. They brought him in for a physical. The team doctors failed his physical and said there was a good chance he would not be able to return to anywhere near peak form this entire season. Any logical front office then moves on from that trade or demands the trade be changed.
Like they should have demanded Jaylen Brown.
Because when that trade was made, you and I actually said, not a bad trade. And we did that thinking the team has cleared Isaiah Thomas. He's going to come back near full strength. I mean, even this final series with a mostly healthy Isaiah Thomas is still a different series. The Cavs aren't going to win the finals with Isaiah Thomas this year. But the Cavs had no one to run the offense and get to the basket other than LeBron. A mostly healthy Isaiah Thomas, 20-point per game scoring Isaiah Thomas, at least gives the chance of prayer in this series. And the fact that the Cavs made that trade, which we later found out with the failed physical, is the second move that led to where the Cavs are at now.
I mean, that's as bad as the James Harden trade when they made the when Oklahoma City made almost the trade. Like it's probably worse, honestly, because we traded for Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, Ante Zizic, and the Brooklyn pick. What do we have left out of it? Zizic and the 8th pick. That's all we have left for Kyrie Irving, who is a top 15 player in the league. And you could argue he's even higher than that. Kyrie Irving, had he been on this team this year, the Cavs would have a much better chance of A, winning the finals, and B, convincing LeBron that this team is worth staying at because he still has a top 15 player with him and a top 30 player with him in Kevin Love. That team alone, LeBron would have been like, I can figure out the other pieces. I have these two guys with me. I just need a few more things.
I have a front office that's been here
with
me before.
Yeah, David Griffin's still here. I trust David Griffin. Yeah. Kyrie trusted David Griffin, which if you didn't listen, we're not going to plug the podcast because it's not our podcast, but if you go listen to Bill Simmons' podcast and his interview with David Griffin, you heard a lot of those things where when he discussed about what was happening during that situation, David Griffin was doing what he needed to do, but as he was in the war room trying to make trades, trying to do things, he was relieved of his duties. And once that person is gone, that person that was very close with Kyrie and willing, and Kyrie was willing to give his faith to, I think that's when we lost Kyrie, and that year, less than a year that we've had now, has changed the entire shaping of this franchise for maybe the next 5 to 10 years.
One small comment. Bill Simmons pretty much sucks at basketball takes, but he has some good interviews.
Yeah.
Anyways, David Griffin's a fascinating interview just because of all the things he's seen and heard. And I'm sure there's stories about a lot of things, Dan Gilbert and others, that I'm sure would be incredible to hear that he'll never share because he's too classy of a person.
Yeah.
And if you look at this, I think this, just to kind of put a bow on this package and move on, look at the Philadelphia 76ers. They are a young, up-and-coming team, a lot of talent, expected to make a run at the finals in the coming years. They just lost their GM, Brian Colangelo, because
his wife.
Because his wife had Twitter burner accounts and was harassing play.
And divulging sensitive information.
It's a very 2018 thing to happen, but it's besides the point. They don't have a GM right now.
Nope.
When you talk to people who are in the know in the NBA, or, you know, not talk to them, but look at their tweets, listen to their podcasts, etc. Everyone says, well, first call's got to be David Griffin, right?
And if he's not first, it's got to be one of the two.
And that's who the Cavs gave up. For reasons that are still unclear, besides Dan Gilbert wanting to have big balls and control his own team.
And like we don't know this for a fact, but that could easily mean next year we're facing David Griffin and LeBron for a couple times the year if he plays for Philly. That's a podcast we'll get to later on, but we know that has definitely been a spot that's been highly talked about for LeBron since probably January or February, since the 76ers started their big run that they had near the end of the season. If David, now especially without Brian Colangelo, if David Griffin is that GM that gets, or the president of basketball operations, How much more stock do you think that puts into LeBron thinking that he might just want to stay in the Eastern Conference?
Short answer, a lot. So, looking back, one more thing to look back on this season, I think, was the moves the moves the Cavs made at the trade deadline. At the time, you and I liked the moves.
Yeah. They were, I mean, for as much as Kobe Altman.
And go ahead, give your thoughts now as to what you versus what you thought then versus what you think now about what moves the Cavs made.
I mean, Kobe Altman really didn't have much to go with, especially after everything that happened. He was hired as the GM, not experienced, but he had worked with David Griffin in the past, and David Griffin has said nice things about Kobe Altman, believes that he can do the job. He was handed a deck that was stacked against him in his favor with aging players or players that just didn't fit the team. He traded Isaiah Thomas, who had become a locker room cancer. He traded Jay Crowder, who was not fitting and not playing well with the Cavs. He traded Dwayne Wade, who was not willing to sacrifice a bit part to be a bit part and wanted to go back to Miami, clearly. He gave up a lot of things that were part of the Cavs his first time with them, that first summer, and also some of their core and their DNA from when they had won the championship. He gave up a lot of that to get Rodney Hood, who we thought at the time was going to be that maybe third scoring option for the Cavs. He had shown promise in Utah as a good three-point shooter, able to create off the dribble. Then we had the Lakers players, Jordan Clarkson, maybe a solid bench player, a guy that could come in and score and maybe do a little bit of distributing, not going to kill you on defense. Larry Nance, great story, coming back to Cleveland to play where his father's number was retired and then eventually having his number unretired to wear it. Played really well at the beginning of the season, but then he had an injury. I think it was a hamstring injury, and that really limited his effectiveness until later in the year. Jordan Clarkson became pretty much a net negative on the team, especially in the last 2 rounds.
Pretty much, but
yeah. Like, I mean, he was missing all his shots. He was turning the ball over. He wasn't playing defense. Rodney Hood became a pariah for not coming into the game in Toronto when he just wasn't playing well and they sat him out of the rotation. He came back in the finals, and in game 3, he looked fantastic. Because you
or
know,
at least decent.
Like, he was making all the shots, he was giving the Cavs a spark, and he was trying hard, which you couldn't say about everyone else. Larry Nance actually started playing pretty well at the end of the year, and then we had George Hill. George Hill is the ultimate what-if player for the Cavs, because 2 years ago we saw Utah George Hill being arguably one of the top 10 point guards in the league. Maybe not, probably near the bottom of it, maybe 10 to 12, but he was a great three-point shooter, good distributor, elite perimeter defender, and then his injuries and just his ability, all those abilities kind of went with it. And he, in this finals, he was basically a shell of himself. And especially after that game one blunder where he missed the free throw, he never looked the same after playing that game.
I think looking back at the Cavs trade deadline moves, you pretty much summed up what we expected to get and what we got. The individual pieces were disappointing for what the Cavs got back. But I stand by my take that the Cavs did the right thing by making those moves for this reason. The Cavs gave up their own first-round pick this year, which is going to be mid-20s. Which is mid-20s, I should
it's
say.
It's going to be 29th because they got to the finals.
The Cavs gave up some flexibility going forward because of the contracts they added.
And the ones they gave up which were shorter term.
Going forward, the Cavs didn't sacrifice a lot for the players they got. And those players they got were, if you look at George Hill, definitely a disappointment. If you look at Jordan Clarkson, definitely a disappointment, at least in the playoffs. If you look at Larry Nance, I'd say he was about what you expected.
He's about average.
And I think if you're looking at Rodney Hood, a massive, massive disappointment.
Yeah, and then he finally showed a little bit at the end. But
at the end of the day, when the Cavs made those trades, you and I said, the day they made those trades, you said, well, and this is at a time where the Cavs were third or fourth in the conference. Philly was on fire. Boston looked great.
Toronto was playing well.
Toronto was playing better than they've ever played.
And the Pacers were catching us.
And you and I sat here and said, well, Cavs are probably going back to the finals. And guess what?
They did.
We were right. And while I don't think those trades were some type of miracle, And I think that a lot of the players the Cavs got in those trades were a disappointment compared to expectations. The Cavs weren't going to make the finals without making those trades.
And at least they didn't give up the Brooklyn pick and, for Kemba Walker or a DeAndre Jordan, something like that.
And they kept the Brooklyn pick. So I think, looking back, the trades weren't great, but they served their purpose to surround LeBron with at least relatively competent talent and improve team chemistry. And the Cavs got back to the finals, and they weren't getting there. And you weren't getting an ultra-motivated, incredible LeBron at the level he was at in these playoffs without making those trades. So end of the day, they weren't great trades, but they didn't sacrifice a lot long-term, and the Cavs got back to the finals. You and I said when those trades were made that the Cavs aren't winning the finals.
Yeah, that didn't matter.
The point was, this could be LeBron's last season in Cleveland. Get to the finals. At least do that one more year.
Just see what happens.
And the Cavs did it. So, you know, the last year has been a disaster for the Cavs. In terms of decision making,
might change the course of their
roster construction
for next 5-10
organizational
years.
Culture. It's been a disaster. But at the end of the day, the Cavs made the finals all 4 years LeBron was in Cleveland. This second time,
they're 4 wins away from.
And I think this is the last topic we can kind of discuss. Is goddamn, that guy is still freaking amazing.
I mean, he's gotten better. I mean, almost every year. Like, I don't know what else you can really say at this point about LeBron and his greatness. I mean, he got better this year playing with a worse team, was more efficient, and was at one point in the year shooting at the same three-point clip as Steph Curry while shooting well from the field, passing the ball, played all 82 games. He played over 100 games this year. He played 82 games, then the Game 7 of the Celtics series was the 100th game. He played 104 games this year and did not miss a single game and played in, at the least, the high 30s every single game. And more of the time in the playoffs, he was playing 42 to 45 minutes every single game and even played 48 minutes sometimes. I don't know what else you can say. I don't know what else I can tell you to say to make you realize what you were seeing with LeBron is not going to happen again in my generation specifically. He is our generation's MJ, and he might be better than MJ. That's another decision that people have to make, and that's another discussion for another day, but every game I watched, I didn't watch the Cavs for the Cavs. I watched the Cavs because of LeBron, because I don't know when I'm ever going to see this in my lifetime again.
Yeah, it's the same for me. You know, I'm always going to be a Cavs fan, for sure. Always.
I will, but
and
what did we really watch it for?
But just the things LeBron was able to do, and we've seen LeBron do most of these things before, but the workload.
He played 4,000 minutes.
The amount that LeBron did in his 15th season at age 33 is absolutely unprecedented. And
this is from other greats, too, not just LeBron. 15th year in the league, even for other greats.
A lot of guys are retired.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was like the only one, and even he was washed up almost at that
point.
Kareem
is the only guy at this point that really compares to the longevity of LeBron.
He was respectable that 15th year, but he wasn't at this level.
Well, Kareem was respectable in year 19 or 20,
yeah.
But that's incredibly rare.
Yeah, and Kobe was washed. Dwayne Wade is washed at this point. He's played 15 years in the league. Like, when you get to that 15th year in the league, you're not supposed to get better. LeBron has gotten better. We keep saying, when is he going to taper off? When's his peak going to end? It hasn't. He has been the best player in the NBA since 2011, probably, you could say. Definitively, he's been the best player by a mile for the last 7 years of his career. Arguably 8. I don't know what else you can say about him. Like, I don't know what other argument there is for people that hate on him and talking about his greatness. I just don't know what else you can say.
There's not many people left that do.
Other than Skip Bayless, who else is left?
Yeah, but Skip Bayless is his entire
career.
He's a hack, basically. His
entire career is hate on LeBron.
There's people whose entire purpose is to be controversial, and that's why they get paid the money they do. And good for people like Skip Bayless for getting the money, but I don't think he actually believes those things.
Oh, I think he does. I think that's the problem. But
the point is, the workload LeBron took on and the domination, absolute domination, from this playoff run and this entire season, especially from the trade deadline on, has been incredible. It's been awesome. And no matter what goes forward, I'm glad that we got this stretch. Not just this 4 years, which was incredible and has Cleveland's first title in, 50 plus years.
We got 11 years of LeBron.
Yeah, but
11.
Yeah, it's incredible because, and again, we're not assuming LeBron's leaving. There's a very significant chance, and because of all the things we've discussed the past year and how things have gone.
We've had at least 11 years of LeBron, and it could be just 11, but we've had over a decade of watching this kid grow up from being the best high school player of all time to arguably being the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, so, it's been incredible to watch, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to do it, even if the Cavs have been a roller coaster of playing lazy, playing well. It's been a roller coaster the past 4 years of ups and downs and drama.
Would you change it?
And a lot of winning.
I wouldn't change a thing.
No, of course not. I mean, you go to the finals 4 years in a row. What more can you ask for? So,
and not just the NBA backpack, like he revitalized the city of Cleveland when he came back. Like the economy had gone down severely when he left.
And the amount of work he does with his charities.
The LeBron James Foundation.
And I just think that, obviously LeBron's impact on the area
is
incredible.
I will now root for him as long as he doesn't go to the Warriors. I will root for him wherever he goes.
The only other team besides the Warriors that I would have a hard time rooting for LeBron with is the Celtics.
Even then, I'd root for him.
And I
just to beat the Warriors.
It's also funny, if you look at 2011, when LeBron had a poor finals.
Oh, he was horrible.
Against the Mavericks.
He melted down.
Do you remember Cavs for Mavs? That was a thing. People had bumper stickers dedicated to rooting for the team that was playing against LeBron. And it's amazing to see how far we've come since then. And looking back on it now, I understand why I felt the way I did. I was younger at the time. I was still in high school.
Yeah, I mean, I was 16 when he left to go to Miami.
I was just graduating high school. So, of course, at that time, I was a more emotional person. And I don't think there's anything wrong with Cleveland booing LeBron when he came back. And I don't think there's anything wrong with Cleveland booing LeBron and rooting against him at that time. Because the way LeBron left in 2010 was a gut punch. And
it was probably his lowest moment in his professional career.
Certainly, probably, yeah.
His basketball career.
And I don't have any shame for rooting against LeBron back then. But with everything that's gone on over the course of the past 8 years, the past 4 years, the past year, just looking back, wherever LeBron goes, I think the vast majority of Cavs fans are going to be rooting for him to win a title, rooting for him to beat this Warriors team. And in a sense, if he does leave, we're almost going to be living vicariously through LeBron because we know that that could have stayed here in Cleveland had Dan Gilbert not made the decisions he's made.
And I think as
Cleveland... And that's where we're at.
As Cleveland fans now, we want him to be that greatest player of all time. We want him to realize that and for people to stop arguing the fact that he's lost six NBA finals or that he's had moments in the past where he wasn't the same player. He is a completely different player from when he was here the first time to what he is now. Because when his first stint here, he hadn't learned how to win. He didn't have good teammates with him. And at that point, he just had to leave to become who he is now, as both a basketball player and as an individual. When he went to Miami, he became that player. He learned how to lead. He came back here. He put the city on his back and he said, "I'm not letting you down. We're not going..." Even when we were down 3-1 to the best team in regular season history, he's like, "We're not going down without a fight."
Yeah, and it's, like we'd mentioned, Kyrie was...
And Kyrie was very valuable,
especially the last three games of that finals. Kyrie was incredible. Kevin Love has been underrated his whole time in Cleveland. The Cavs have had role players step up at many periods, especially. Even with JR. Especially. And you know what? That's one more thing I wanted to mention. Thank you for reminding me. I'm going to say it one more time, guys. I know that JR sucks now, and I know he's made a lot of dumb decisions, especially at the end of game one. And I know it sucks that we're paying him a lot of money now, but you don't change it because without JR Smith...
You don't win that game seven.
Without JR Smith, the Cavs don't win a title. And do you remember when the Cavs won the title? JR was a hero.
Yeah, shirtless hero.
Shirtless JR. And yeah. Just looking back, it's been an incredible ride, and it's been some of the most fun I've ever had watching sports.
I mean that,
and I just don't, we're never gonna have something like this in Cleveland again, unless he stays.
If he stays,
which feel free. Yeah. So on that note, I want to give a couple small updates about this podcast and kind of what we're doing going forward. So today is June 11th, recording this podcast, and that's when we're gonna post it. The NBA draft is in 10 days.
Yay!
NBA free agency starts in 3 weeks. LeBron will probably have made his choice within a month or less.
I would say he's probably going to, if we had to guess, probably after 4th of July. It's when he usually does.
So in the coming month, we're going to have for you, without being too specific and planning it out, we're going to have a draft preview. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a draft reaction.
Yeah.
We're going to have multiple LeBron-centric podcasts about where he should go, where we think he will go, where he could go.
We're going to be teams basically pitching why he would go to this city. We have the three main ones, which we'll get into later, but everyone knows the LA Lakers, the Houston Rockets, the Philly 76ers. We want to get deeper into that. We want to pitch LeBron as those teams and think about, well, what if he went here? What are the positives and negatives here? And Andrew's going to have his own thing that he can tell you about real quick.
Yeah, we're going to have a podcast where we basically just talk to friends, family, fans we've interacted with on Twitter, just kind of get everyone's feel for how they feel about this summer, just to kind of do a different kind of podcast. We're going to have a podcast, obviously, about the Cavs' future, because everything is going to change, potentially. And even if LeBron comes back, a lot of things are going to change.
Right.
Then we're going to have, you know, initial reactions to free agency, any reactions to any trades that happen, and then once the LeBron decision has been made,
it'll be fallout,
then there's going to be a lot of things to talk about then. So, you know, stay with us. We really, really appreciate anybody that listens. We're going to have a lot of good content going forward. We're going to try and get, you know, a lot of you listeners involved, like I said, with the one kind of crowdsourcing podcast. You know, it's going to be a very interesting month. There's going to be a lot to talk about. But
we have another sport that you guys can get excited about, though, coming up. And we're going to have it on the podcast soon. We're going to be joined by our friend Olam, and we're going to be discussing World Cup. We're going to be talking about international soccer, the one thing that Americans can get behind every 4 years. We're going to talk about the World Cup. Even though the United States isn't in it, it's one of the biggest tournaments in the world every 4 years. And we want to get a little bit different on the podcast. Obviously, we're more basketball-centric, football-centric podcast. But why not bring in the international game of the world? And let's talk about it. So look for that soon. World Cup starts on June 14th. So if you want to keep that on your TiVo or your DVR.
Your TiVo!
That throwback. Dates me. But yeah.
Yeah,
look out for that.
I can't wait for that one personally because I'm a very casual soccer fan, so that should be a very informative podcast. Graham and Olam really know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I watch. That's probably my third or fourth most watched sport, that with baseball.
Also, a reminder once again that I work for the Cleveland Indians, thus we cannot discuss them on this podcast. Unfortunate, but reality.
Can we say a very brief statement about them at all?
You can, not me.
Get your shit together, Indians.
Okay, they've been really good lately, but okay. That was unnecessary and kind of stupid. But that's what we do on the podcast sometimes, I guess. So, also, as usual, please check out TreeCitySports.com or TreeCityRecords.com. I do that every time. TreeCityRecords.com.
Well, we might have a website soon. You don't know.
Check out my Twitter at @abaker_sports. Check out Graham's Twitter at @GTMOHAN. And, you know, once again, it's been a hell of a run with LeBron, And we're going to find out.
And hopefully it continues.
And hopefully it continues. We're going to have a lot of content in the horizon in the next month or so. So keep listening. And we really appreciate anyone out there who does.
I apologize.
To who?
The Indians.
Okay. All right. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Peace.